So I would like to introduce our keynote speaker, and he's the director of SUSE Labs. Go ahead and set up if you want. We had him set up. And so we've talked about bringing in the keynote speaker, having the conference here in Prague, and of course he's right here, SUSE Labs, as the director. And so please welcome Vortek Pavlok. Pavlok? Pavlik, but yeah, that's fine.
I'm quite grateful you managed my first name right, so that doesn't usually happen. No. Will I get a HDMI? Yes, fine. There's the presentation. So, yes, I was actually asked to do a keynote, and I hate doing keynotes, because keynotes are supposed to be witty and funny and all that, and that's really hard. And I don't even know enough about OpenSUSE and the community, unfortunately, because I'm kind of a little bit from the other side, right? I definitely am very much a community guy, because I started as a kernel engineer in SUSE years ago. Actually, we'll go there in my talk. But I have not been involved in the actual distro building work much, mainly coding. So I thought, well, maybe I could talk about how it all looks from the enterprise side of things that, yeah, I'm mainly involved in my work. And hopefully it will be a little bit funny at least. So, it all started, as you all know, in 1992 when SUSE was founded. The chameleon looked the wrong way, and the dots were between the letters and all that. And I have to add one thing, and that is due to a popular demand by some of the organizers. I need to also say here that the founding of SUSE actually happened in an Indian restaurant in Erlangen. Now, that was still way ahead of my time at SUSE, right? So I joined only a couple years later, when one manager from SUSE actually knocked on my door in Prague and asked, well, do you want to work for SUSE? And I said, well, what is it? and he said, well, we are a Linux company and we would like you to do what you do, just we'll pay you for it. You keep hacking USB and we are fine. So yes, I said, that's good. Why not? Let's do that. And so I joined SUSE in 1999. And since I was hacking on USB, and it was kind of researchy stuff, I thought, okay, I'll call my work something. And so I created this banner up there, SUSE Labs. It's pixelated. It's like quite, well, actually the projector doesn't show it that badly, but it's quite ugly because all the word was pixelated back then. And that was about April, that was May 99, when I created that banner and put up a web page on my university computer. And then a month later, well, 2 months later in July, actually that announcement came out. SUSE found SUSE Labs. I was like, what? Okay, I'm already in there. That's good. And it was all about how SUSE is investing into Linux research and very businessy press announcement. But yeah, excuse me for using the laser pointer. But this bit in red actually changed the future of everything. Because Holger Dyrhoff, back then, the head of SUSE, actually also said that thanks to doing all that research and having all the clever people there, maybe I was included, we can do level 3 support for customers. And that was something that was not on the market really back then. I mean, Red Hat was dabbling in that as well, but thinking about really doing support for paying customers all the way to actually fixing any bug that gets thrown at you was kind of unknown, and that changed the course of SUSE, because still, even in 2000, and that is only later, SUSE's main business was selling boxes, right? the value of SUSE was that we took all the various bits of software that were floating out there in the open source sea of packages. Well, actually not packages, right? Source code, tarballs, and created a distro out of that and put it on shelves in computer stores and supermarkets. And our salespeople were actually fighting for shelf space. Is this something that's kind of unbelievable in today's world, where you can download everything, so yeah, there is no software on shelves anyway. And it was not really doing that great anymore, because yes, internet was getting faster and everybody was downloading stuff. So why the hell would somebody go to a store to actually buy a box? I mean, there was manual. We had a big documentation department. We were quite proud of it. We still have a great documentation department, but they are focusing a little bit on different stuff than creating paper books, which was actually the main content of that box. So the thing that changed it was IBM. And IBM back then requested us, well, you have this nifty Linux distro, and we have this grand new Z900 first, or actually second 64-bit mainframe in the world. And we are toying with the idea. Actually, one of our engineers a year ago did port Linux to it. Maybe you could create a distro for it, but it would need to be enterprise quality. And so we just took what we'd had, slapped a sticker on it, saying enterprise. And that was it, right? The first SLES was born in 2000. It didn't really have a version number. It was just the SLES for Z series, for IBM. It was not really shipped many times or sold many times, but the name was born at least. I mean, before we had all other kinds of acronyms like SUSE Linux Standard Server and SUSE Linux Professional and SUSE Linux Personal and whatever SLOX was, Open Exchange, and there was also like a school server and all that. But this one kind of became the destiny. And started shaping SUSE a lot. SUSE back then was still mainly doing the distro, so that the thing that originally was SUSE Linux, later was OpenSUSE, and then using that to create the SLESes, like SLES 8. That actually took a long time to find that screenshot. Nobody has SLES 8 screenshots anymore. This actually is not a SLES 8 screenshot anymore. It is a United Linux one, which was SLES 8 based, and it actually was having a chameleon in there, because nobody noticed and somebody forgot to remove it to brand it as United Linux. So SLES 8 was like the first big SLES that was shipped across architectures. It actually supported even Itanium back then. It was a lot of effort. And the way that SUSE created it, and also a number of subsequent SLESes, was that we took the .1 release of either first SUSE Linux, then later OpenSUSE. So the idea was that we released the .0, it is all fresh and new and somewhat buggy, and then people use it, and then through that we find bugs, and once it's reasonably stable, we do the .1 release, let it run for a while, see if it's stable, and then rebrand that as SLES with additional things. And that was the problem. That was the problem that was becoming painful, because there were these enterprise things like support for, I don't know, multipath, or even the Itanium and Z-series, because only a few people would probably want to have those next to their desk at home. Well, maybe more percentage than in the usual population would be in this room, but still, that's kind of unusual. So the problem was always making sure that in the next SLES release we have all those bits again, because they were not going back into OpenSUSE, really. And then we changed it a little bit in SLES 11, SLES 12, where there was Factory born, and OpenSUSE was branching off Factory, and SLES was branching off Factory, and that carried us quite well for some time, but actually creating SLES 12 was extremely, SLES 12 GA was extremely painful. Not many people remember it anymore, because it's a thought well hidden in their brains, but But it was tough, right? It was tough because, again, that same problem happened again. We just branched our factory and we lost all that hardening from the previous less 11 that went in. All that enterprise work was totally lost because, and that was a problem, right? Slash 11 was branched off from factory, and then slash 11 service pack 1 was developed from the GA version, and service pack 2 was developed from the service pack 2 was developed from service pack 1, and so on. So actually none of those changes were really going back into factory. And so when we branched off Sleet 12, we were basically starting an enterprise Linux from scratch again. And obviously that's gonna hurt. So and there we are getting like to the main or my funniest bit of the presentation. That was so bad that it actually made me to create a silly story that I presented in whole hands back then. And I'm actually going to show you the pictures from that silly story. Not actually all the narrative word by word, because it was really kind of childish, but it did have the impact that was required, right? So it was called The Tale of Two Chameleons. And yeah, excuse the style, because it was actually drawn in like 10 minutes ahead of that presentation back then, because I kind of tend to prepare these things at the very last minute. And it was started at, well, there were two chameleons. One was, well, actually I will skip the names because I don't want them to catch on. Well, one was representing SLES and the other one was representing OpenSUSE, right? And SLES was like the somewhat more sedentary type, while OpenSUSE was more adventurous. And then, well, the hard times came on that household. And that was actually a representation of the real financial crisis that was hitting the industry quite badly at that time, and actually forced SUSE to do a lot of changes. It was, I mean, up until the 10 times, or it's less 10 times, we actually had a massive department. It was called the OpenSUSE department. It was primarily charged with creating OpenSUSE, and then there was the enterprise department, which were taking that and turning it into nice and shiny enterprise stuff. In the financial crisis, we actually, well, had to focus on surviving. So a lot of those OpenSUSE people were, well, rebranded as packages or actually taken into other roles inside of the enterprise part. And we said, okay, yes, we will give full control of OpenSUSE to community, which has happened. I mean, just an absolutely, well, it was absolutely great step, even though it was a little bit forced by the economic climate. And just have a small group that will be like helping that effort. So that happened, and kind of, yeah, that was described by, well, letting the other guy, the small and more adventurous guy, letting him free and roaming the hills, really. While the other one stayed at home. The house was actually, well, badly damaged, and back then we had to lay off a lot of people, so it really was kind of painful. But the guy that was at home, the SLES chameleon, he was actually doing quite well. And over the time, over the various acquisitions that SUSE went through, we became profitable and we became growing. And well, he, or she maybe, actually turned into a kind of a cash cow. While OpenSUSE was not really that thriving, I mean, thanks to being lean and agile, I would say agile, there were a lot of changes in how OpenSUSE was done, right? There were the staging projects and CI introduced, and the build service was enhanced a lot. And suddenly, even with small resources, with not so much investment from the company, OpenSUSE was really a great doing viable project. And yeah, SLES wasn't, right? SLES 12 was painful. So there was something broken in the way that we were doing SLES. This is an image where, well, he can't even fit into the house anymore. So he has to be in the front porch, but there is a fence because he is kind of afraid of doing anything more radical. And so we knew that we have to change how we develop slides back then. And well, the idea was that we turn OpenSUSE not into the like collection of packages that is tested by the community, that we provide the packages for and we get the testing, because that value was not really there anymore if we would just ignore giving the code back, because it was not the enterprise code that was tested anymore. It was the community code that was tested. So how to be able to give more and to get more? And the thing that SLES was obviously missing was the agile infrastructure of the continuous integration and the staging projects and the testing that was done on that. That was a great thing that SLES could gain. But what could it give back was the question. So that presentation actually concluded with this nice happy end picture. And after that came the technical part. So the question was, what's happening, right? Will they be able to live together? Will they be able to learn from each other and actually change the way how SLES is developed? And maybe OpenSUSE can get again more from SUSE as the business part of it. So, yeah, was that the end? Well, actually not. A lot of things happened since that. This presentation was presented by me in, 2014. And yes, a lot of those changes were already ripe, as in OpenSUSE had the technology developed. SLES actually needed a change in direction. It was not that I would invent the idea of what to do. It was just like putting the things together and pointing a finger on it. So, yeah, the technical slide is this. It's just one of the many that were presented. This is an idea of how development should be done, that actually if we are working on the next sleep project, we should get those packages into factory first, or ideally if there are changes that even are inside the packages, to get to the upstream project first, get it into development branch. After a CI test, it would be merged into factory or tumbleweed as we know it today. And then after additional product QA, it would be accepted into SLES and distributed. And this is mostly happening. There were tweaks and changes and so on, but it's actually doing pretty well. Now, the thing that the enterprise side of SUSE could give back was, of course, the enterprise distribution, because there is competition. There is CentOS, there is Ubuntu LDS. Those are distributions which cater to the needs of people that don't want to live on the bleeding edge, right? So that's what the market, what the community is shifting. I mean, I at home am using OpenSUSE on many machines, and I don't want to upgrade them every Tuesday. Although it gives me like the feeling that yes, I have the greatest version of packages and so on, but my wife that is running statistical analysis for her work on those machines is kind of complaining, oh, you upgraded my darn library versions again. I'll have to recompile my stuff. So yeah, what if we could have a community distro that has all the benefits of the enterprise distro? Well, and that's what Leap is, really. And initially, there was quite a bit of change, quite a bit of difference between Leap and SLES, particularly in the times of SLE 12, or with the Leap 42 series. The kernel was different, a lot of config was different. But with 15, we actually finally achieved parity. OpenSUSE was developed together with SLES pretty much at the same pace. Even the kernel is shared. You get all that stability, all that immense amount of testing that goes into SLES today, because yes, we were not sleeping on the SLES side either. We were adding a lot more brute force machine power into testing by using OpenQA, by actually expanding the test setups. So that we could have what is today perceived as an enterprise distro, right? There is a big difference between the first lens, which was just an additional sticker, and today's distro, which where you really have high demands of stability and performance and all that. So when we take a in the labs, when we take a Linux kernel, it takes us more than a year, probably almost 2 years, to get it to the level of performance and stability that is actually acceptable for enterprise use, and it's more than a year of quite heavy work, because the next time we take a look at the upstream kernel is broken again. We do push all the changes back, of course, and we get upstream to perform, but there are more people working on that that focus more on features and supporting new hardware, and that always has a detrimental effect on the overall performance. So that's now getting going into Leap as well. So, yeah, from my pure selfish view, I'll be very happy to have that on my home desktop. And yeah, that's pretty much the whole story of the, today's keynote. Leap. It will be announced today that we have a Leap 15. So, hooray! And thank you.